Welcome to Watching Westworld, the officially unofficial podcast for Westworld on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 4, Episode 3, Année Folle. I tried. Did I get there? I don't know. I'm not French.
Annie Folle.
Annie Folle. Annie Folle. Sure. as we talked about, it means any orifice in French. Yep. In the instant take, we got to the heart of that. No, it means the crazy years in French. And that's what we're in. We're in the crazy years of Westworld. We're in the crazy years of the 1920s and temperance. Aaron, what did you think of this episode after watching it a time or two more?
Yeah, I really enjoyed my rewatch. You know, there's a lot of really cool, interesting things that I've been pondering. There's a couple things I noticed on multiple watches. There's a couple things I noticed after watching and reading Reddit and watching it again. They're just an incredible. I think this was an episode that I don't know if it revealed a lot is
yeah,
right, but definitely kind of like showed that some theories are closer to being right than others. I think it definitely gave us a lot of information about what kind of timelines we're dealing with, because for sure we're dealing with multiple timelines.
Oh yeah,
for sure. Bernard and Stubbs are not on the same timeline that Caleb and Maeve are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the, you know, like I said, it's return of the I think engaging puzzle box that Westworld is at its best, and we yeah. all collectively, the super fans, are going to try our damnedest to ruin it by trying to out puzzle box it. Yeah,
right. That's the thing. I feel like this would have been a big reveal of information if it hadn't been for reading Reddit and like the hive mind, right, figuring all this stuff out. Because like the stuff with Temperance being this park that's essentially, it seems like designed both as a trap for Maeve and Caleb, but more importantly, as a way to infect humans with the flies, yes. was figured out ahead of time. And I was just watching confirmation of the thing I already expected. Whereas this would have felt brand new and super cool if I hadn't.
But I will say I think it managed to do that, because I also don't think they're playing exactly straight with the reveals.
Sure.
Now, I think that everybody is like noticing the not playing straight with the yep. reveals, but so
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm Stubbs and I'm being led down the path by Bernard, right?
Sure.
With just as much information as I need. And it feels pretty good, honestly. It does feel like a return to form for Westworld. On second watch, I had less problems with the slow or repetitive, let's say, nature of the Temperance stuff. I felt like it was denser than I realized that first watch through. And I don't know, maybe I was just like eager to get to the stuff that I knew was coming that was cooler. But yeah, I definitely had settled in on the second watch. And so I thought the episode was really good.
Yeah. I thought that there's a lot of interesting, there's a couple interesting things I want to talk about, because I don't know where else we do on the little mini creating the Westworld show at the end.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or I guess in the expanded features, a section of Westworld, on HBO Max, they explicitly said they're going for a Road Warrior vibe, which I think everybody got.
Mm-hmm.
The other big thing that people clued us into on the Instant Talk podcast, but I know not everybody gets that, is Aurora Perrineau, who is the nameless Mad Max desert rat that shows up to pick up Bernard and Stubbs, gives him a ride, is billed as quote unquote C.
Yeah.
Which we, enterprising, because I'd forgotten this already, but in episode one, Caleb, when he sees his daughter Frankie for the first time in the show, calls her Cookie as a nickname.
Mm-hmm.
So people are already kind of hot on the new girl showing up is Caleb's daughter in the future, and they're trying to figure out like how did they make that work, but like yeah, it's mm-hmm. almost confirmed at this point.
Almost. Yeah, I do wish that in the show they would have given her any kind of name, right? Like I just want something to call her when I'm talking about her to my friends, if I'm just a show watcher and I don't like watch the behind the scenes stuff, because you couldn't yeah. have known her name unless you went and watched the making of Westworld, where it's not even said, it's just like a lower third that says C in yeah. quotes. So like,
yeah,
what do I call this person if I'm trying to tell my friends, hey, I watched Westworld last night? Do I call her like the person who shows up in the car and picks up Bernard and takes him to the desert. That's kind of a mouthful.
Well, it's a weird, because it's like, I don't know, like, I can't imagine. So I don't know this type of show you talk to, like, casually with your friends. Like, oh, yeah, Westworld, is this? This is like, you could have an Abed from Community level conversation with other people who are in the top 1% of 1% of show watchers. But, like, yeah, I think most of your friends would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Westworld, is people still watching that show? If you're like, oh, yeah. So
there are casual viewers of Westworld. Certain millions of them. Or, well, not millions, but hundreds of thousands of them.
Hundreds of thousands. There you go. Yeah. I don't, in the circumstances that they meet, like, I don't know that it's appropriate for people to be like introductions when you've got guns to heads and you're deeply skeptical of people's motives and, you know, so like if next episode they are not intentionally naming her, it's going to feel intentional.
But just like throwing a line when he's grabbing the new dude, whose name we also don't have. I think Daniel Wu might be his name, the actor's name. I think I caught that in the credits. Just have him say, where'd you find this guy, C? Where'd you find this guy? Any name, literally any name. I don't need it to be the C name.
Dude.
Yeah, sure. Call her dude, and that's what I'll call her in the future. Anything. But yeah. I take your point. It's like, yeah, the scenario was not really set up for names.
The other thing that happened in the Westworld, the creating Westworld reality that I thought was pretty interesting is there's a voiceover where the production people are talking about the black goo. They really lay it out. Like the black goo is both an attractant that attracts flies to it and also an accelerant that accelerates the infection both in the flies and the hosts. And it turns the host blood black. And as the guy is saying this, he goes, when we see black blood, we know the host has been affected. And it shows the scene of all of the quote unquote humans in their glass boxes, you know, blowing their heads off because of the obedience trials.
Mm-hmm.
No black blood.
I know.
No black goo. All very red, very fresh human blood. So I think they are wink, wink, hint, hinting. They're engaging in some Reddit theory shit posting on the show.
Yeah.
In the bonus materials.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely like makes me think that these are all hosts, right?
I mean,
that's the conclusion to draw.
Yeah, after watching this thing three times and reading entirely too much stuff about it, I'm pretty convinced that the second they walked into Temperance, it was a trap. And it's all a put on, all engineered. I mean, I don't think literally it's all engineered to get Caleb and Maven
dual
there.
Dual purpose, sure.
But yeah, that was definitely one of the primary objectives. And almost everything, like, and it's like one of those things where it's like the first floor, underfloor, is a showroom and is part of the game. And then you assume they go down another level and like, oh, this is the real shit. I still don't think it. It's all just a put on. It's all like a Disney dark ride, an Epcot Center thing about how we're infecting humans. Now, to what end? I don't know. But like, especially the timing of like, and it makes me think, again, Maeve was allowed to unlock the door. You know, I've got a whole bunch of other theories about what all is going on there. But like, and the man in black shows up just in time to distract her from saving Kate. Like everything felt engineered. On that level. So
yeah, and then you have to wonder what that says about the tower and the signal that it's putting out, right? Because that we thought was like designed to control the flies, which control the humans, and that seems to not be the case. Only the host can hear it, according to this episode, because Caleb can't. So I don't know. There are a lot of theories that you can start to speculate with Christina as well because of this episode, which we didn't see her at all this episode, but I feel like we got information that's pertinent to what she's doing, which we'll talk about when we get to that scene. So yeah, a lot of coloring in of the picture here and getting new information that sheds light on old things, which I'm excited about.
The only other thing is I integrated most of the stuff I want to say about this episode into my comments of the episode. There's one thing I found on Reddit that was interesting that doesn't really fit anywhere. It's commentary for a previous episode. you know, when we, when you see Teddy looking up at Dolores, or my, not Dolores, at Christina in wherever Christina's world, and, you know, they're playing the music and we're feeling like, oh God, Teddy, it's all love. Someone posted a screenshot from, I think it's late season one. It might be late season two, where Ford is talking to Teddy and Teddy is in Teddy mode and he's answering, you know, he's like, there's this girl, Dolores. She's better than I deserve, but maybe someday soon we'll both have the life we've been dreaming of. And Ford says, no, Teddy, you never will. Your job is not to protect Dolores. It's to keep her here. And wondering, like, you know, we've been thinking of Teddy in terms of, oh my God, he's going to be the savior, Christina, but he could be serving to keep her on that, that loop.
I wish I had watched season one more recently. It's been a damn long time. I can't remember like the full context of where he's saying that to Teddy and why.
Is Teddy in analysis mode? And it was seen as like taunting him, but like a lot of people are showing that there are, you know, like we talked about in the feedback section last week, the cattle story that Dolores tells Teddy in season. There's a lot of these connections in season one, season two that, again, if certain theories are right, are being designed as like a repeating rhyme or a chorus.
Yeah,
you know,
like, and I don't know if that's predetermined. I don't know if like you know, Nolan and Joy are sitting there going, okay, in two seasons we're going to bring this piece of information back and it's going to be significant in this way, or if they're like, you know, I really like that fly motif we had going on and it meant this in season one, but let's bring it back for season three, or for season four rather. And we'll change kind of the meaning subtly of it. Use it for two purposes.
You remember that phrase we used to have in Breaking Bad, the strip mining the past to improve the future or to build the future? Like, it wasn't so much that Vince Gilligan and his crew in Breaking Bad had every minute detail, because there was things in like season two that like the tease things that happen in season three. It's more that these people are fans of their show and they pay attention. And when they're in the writing room, they're like, oh my God, we can use this connection from previous seasons and make, like, it's not something to plan out in advance. Yeah. It's just making the most of what you got out there. I could go either way with Nolan and Joy. They could have planned a lot of this out in advance, but also they've had a lot of time to go back and rewatch and obsess over their own show and make sure that they are, you know, strip mining the past to build the future effectively.
Yeah. And Nolan makes some comment about it in the making of Westworld this week. That made me think that they had just, you know, kind of latched onto this fly thing this season and said, you know, that could be cool to bring back in this particular way. So I don't know. But also, I wouldn't put it past them to just be sort of saying things that make it seem like they didn't have this planned out, so that when they do the big reveal of their master plan, then it's more surprising. But we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready to get into the recap?
I think so, yeah.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We start off with Bernard entering the Sublime, and he finds himself in a strange world. Turns out it's a world of his own creation. He meets Keisha, who tells him that they have used the 1-to-1,000-year ratio of time dilation in the Sublime to simulate all possible paths of humanity's future. Bernard searches those paths and finds one which ends in the salvation of humanity. Unfortunately, it also ends in his own death.
Yeah,
that's a big scene.
So he can do one or the other. He can either save humanity or can save himself. He can't do both.
He seems to choose to save humanity.
And that's an interesting thing too. It's putting himself in another messianic mosaic role.
Sure.
Because the thing that knocked Moses out of the running for the promised land was a fit of pride or unwarranted. So the Israelites were thirsting. They're dying in the desert and exasperated with their lack of faith, because every single time the Israelites like, oh, my God, we're going to die because we're going to starve out here. Then God would provide the manna from heaven. Oh, my God, we're going to die here because we get lost. God's going to provide a fiery tornado for them to follow. Like, finally, Moses is kind of like, oh, my God, are you guys so faithless that you think that we would let you die out here in the desert? And he strikes a rock with his magic staff and water shoots out like a geyser from it. And God's like, hey, yo, you got a mouse in your pocket talking about this wee stuff? Because I did that. And even though you've served me faithfully for, I don't know, like 80 years, you're going to die in this desert now, old man, inside of the promised land. So it's one of those things where, like, he saved the people, but died himself short of the goal. And I wonder if they're going to be something along those lines. I can't imagine Bernard having a fit of pride or warrant of self-importance, but the symbolism there is still, I think, useful.
Yeah, could be. Also on the topic of Bernard, I've latched onto this line for some reason, and I don't know if it's important or not, but there's one thing that Akicha says to him, which is irrationality is a rare flaw in ones like us, because he's describing the irrationality of Bernard's position here. Does this make him an outlier of sorts in as far as hosts go, as like in terms of Caleb being an outlier?
I mean, yeah, you have to say that, right? If he says it's a rare flaw, then and he possesses it. Although I also the thing about Akicha, he's talking. He seems like a guy who's been kicking around for 20,000 years and thinking about things.
Sure.
So it's like, is he making a remark about like how the hosts are now after they've been chilling in the Sublime as elevated beings for eons? Or is he talking about like, you know, just baseline hosts, period? Because I've certainly seen hosts do crazy, irrational things, even ones that are, awoken, you know, not the ones on their loops and whatnot. So I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, you know, when you're talking about time and dilation and them spending thousands of years, you know, Kichita, if you take that at its word, he's had 7,000 years to simulate mm-hmm. stuff. So I don't know, but I think, yeah, Outlier seems like it makes sense.
Yeah. To what end? I don't know, but we'll see. I will say there's a lot of stuff going on in this scene, and right at the beginning, you know, things get weird because it starts with "Dad, open your eyes." And it's his fake dead son, right?
Charlie,
who was actually Arnold's son, who, you know, he was created in the image of. And then we see like a whole bunch of, you know, latticework stuff, the tower. And this is just the stuff we're seeing that Bernard is actively participating in. Then there's like the visions he has as he searches the paths. And that's where I think things get super interesting. Because all this other stuff is just like, okay, we're finding out how the Sublime works.
Yeah. I wrote down a description of every one of the brief flashes of imagery that we saw in Bernard. You want me to go over it and you check and see if you agree?
Sure. I think there's like four distinct images that are maybe interesting, but sure, we can go over all.
Okay. So we see like a desert, what appears to be a sandstorm, probably. Yeah.
Who cares?
Explains explains where all the dust is coming from.
Can't see shit.
Might be a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
There's several shots of Hoover Dam complex, a control room, probably. The turbine room.
Hoover Dam. Yeah.
Probably. Mm-hmm. The overflow shaft. I can't imagine this isn't the Hoover Dam.
Yeah.
There's some spiderweb lattice tunnel mm-hmm. that I think is where Hale or Holoris is actually living. I don't think it's on the Delos campus. I think we've seen it in the trailer. Hmm. I think it's like her palace or something, but it could be in the Delos campus. I don't know.
Yeah.
We see the interior of the spider tower, the big white tower, and it appears to be off the coast of Manhattan.
Is like that what that across, shot is of the city?
Because
there's
so.
A shot from way high up of the city.
Yeah. Of, it shows of the interior city. Of the spider tower, and it's off the coast. I think it's supposed to be Manhattan.
But I didn't examine the skyline, but we're in LA though most of the time, right? So like that would be a departure.
Well, I think, and they've specifically said Christina is in New York, right?
Oh, right. Christina is.
So I think to the extent that the tower is connected there, it's off the coast. There's a small tree growing at the end of one of those eternity pools that like have that just meet at the edge and looks like they go on forever. And I couldn't help but think about Dolores's tree. Mm-hmm. Which also caught on fire when
when Bernard walked in. Yeah.
Which is a very burning bush kind of metaphor, which is also sure. ties. That's when God called Moses and drafted him into the Egyptian Liberation Army. Mm-hmm. He spoke to him out of a burning bush. So that was interesting. There's also, we see shots of a dusty, abandoned temperance several different times and several different angles. One of the angles, you can clearly see that C/Cookie/maybe Caleb's daughter, mm-hmm. her electric Jeep is parked in the middle of the street. There's also another shot of, I think, Manhattan downtown. There's an overhead shot of the same lattice tunnel that's either on a Delos campus or in Halos's throne room that has those big red riot guards,
yeah.
bots guarding it. There's a shot of Bernard's hand reaching into like a sand divot for... It could be like a beetle or a scarab, or it could be the ring that he uses to lift the laser gate.
Okay. Or it could be a trimmer. We don't know. It could be the start of Tremors. Yeah.
And then we see the semi post-apocalyptic diner that he start off. And I think you're supposed to understand that these images are taking place backwards in time.
Yeah.
You got a memento thing going.
It's certainly possible. I saw that suggested. It's hard to tell for sure, though.
If I tell you what, if that scarab is a laser gate that he's reaching for, uh-huh. I think I'm going to be very hot on that theory because those are literally the first two things that happen.
Well, but we didn't see him picking up this slug beetle whatever thing.
But is it a beetle? I was looking at this 4K image and I kind of thought it looked like the ring.
I don't know. I didn't get a good look at the ring thing.
But I thought it looked like a beetle, too.
Yeah, it looked like some bug to me, and I could have sworn it was moving, but I could be wrong about that.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah,
because these are just screenshots that you're looking at, right. Whereas in the show, there was enough of a glimpse of that, and they show it several times.
It's like two or three frames, two or three times. Yeah.
I thought it was but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I actually tried to pause and do, and I'm like, oh God, there's got to be a Reddit thread on this, and there was, because it's tough. It's tough trying to sort through all that stuff. So,
yep.
Yeah. I think it's loosely the outline of his adventures this season. He's going to go to the ruins of Temperance, which there's our first clue that we're dealing in an advanced timeline. Then he's going to go. That's going to lead him to Manhattan and the Tower Project there. That's going to ultimately lead him back to the Hoover Dam a project.
With the Sublime, which, you know, we've seen the big rip in the Sublime coming open at the Hoover Dam. So, I mean, that could all be tied into that.
Feels very late season. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. We have talked about like all the theory crafting and all the crazy shit that's going on here. But do you want to talk about the nature of the Sublime? You know, this is something that we've speculated on for a long time, that there would be this big time dilation that they could then. And I think with good reason, right? Back in season three, I think we were all, or no, sorry, season two, we were all but told that that was the case, that it ran faster in the simulation.
Yeah, that you can run, it doesn't have to run at the same clock speed the real world does.
Right. But I found it interesting to see that there isn't even necessarily a place that is the Sublime for everyone, right? The Sublime is different depending on who you are. You can make your own world in there, which is super liberating, for one, and B, I think it's a super cool idea.
I wonder if we'll ever get the Explorer. Like, are there dark areas of the Sublime? Are there
fucked up hosts? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
People living in hell worlds?
Because not all those people that were Westworld hosts were good people. Programmed to be, anyway.
Not all those hosts were woke either, right? Like, a lot of hosts went in as like their Delos programmed host brains, which were pretty dark and were actually in a lot of ways designed to suffer, right? So,
and that's what I said, and the only way you can get them to an awakened state is to torture them. That implies there's some kind of hell version of Sublime that does that until you prove that you've gotten, you know, fidelity as an actual thinking human being.
Who's the last host that is still being tortured 7,000 years into the simulation? Like, they just haven't attained.
Who's the milk guzzler?
Yeah.
Who's the milk guzzler? Right.
That guy.
The growing boy. Yeah, that guy. One of him. Yeah, I don't know. Probably one of the rough and tumble dudes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe those guys take the Sublime like a duck to water, and it's the uptight, quiet, keep it to themselves host you got to worry about.
All right, next up, Bernard wakes up in the dusty hotel room where Stubbs is waiting to greet him, and they leave the motel and begin Bernard's journey to save the world. There's quite a bit going on here that I left out with the details. He's sort of like narrowing down the possibilities of what path he's on based on what's happening in the real world.
From the jokes that Stubbs is saying to his meal order, he's tracking that he is on the right predicted timeline.
Yeah. Which I don't know, man. The infinite timeline theory stuff gets real tricky. We talk about this a lot on the Rick and Morty stuff, which is even more of an infinite timeline. I don't know that we're dealing with infinite possibilities here, but apparently there are only two possibilities at this branching path, and it's what joke Stubbs makes, not whether he makes a joke, not whether he's present, not whether somebody else is in the room, just what joke is he going to make?
Yeah, I don't have a problem. I think that stuff is really cool. I like the mysterious. I like Doctor Strange putting his finger on one side of his nose and being like, there's 14 million possibilities. You only live through one of them, fucker. Mm-hmm. Like, I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No, I did think I mentioned this on Instant Take, but I was really hoping, like, when Bernard woke up and he's gasping for air and he's unstable, it's like, I thought we were going to get some hints to the host's physiology that, like, he hasn't been breathing for kind of, but like nothing. Why did he gasp for air? Was he starved for oxygen? Was his like, is he hungry?
I feel like it's more of a surprise reaction. He only wants a cup of coffee.
Oh, really? Like, it's his emotional effect.
I mean, by I mean, they do give us information about it, right? Like, he doesn't need to eat in 7 years. He's fine. He doesn't need to breathe in 7 years. He's fine. Or 23 years. Who knows how long it's been, right?
Even if you buy he's in some kind of low power shutdown mode, a human being in a coma still has to eat.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how he comes out of this.
He's not even hungry in the diner, so.
Right. I wonder if Stubbs has been... Nah, it doesn't look like Stubbs has touched him or done anything.
No.
Like, he's not, like, been shooting him full of, like, some kind of liquid food or whatever. Yeah, he's just been sitting there. Uh-huh. So, waiting. I don't think... Canonically, I guess, hosts don't really need to eat or breathe. I don't know how they get energy. I don't know how they do their things. Clearly, they can eat because Stubbs eats. But, I still don't know exactly what makes a host run. At least these flesh and blood ones.
Yeah. And we kind of talked a little bit about how many years maybe they've been gone for, or Bernard has been gone for.
As predicted, they had the nice before and after shots at a hotel, and there wasn't a tree growing through the overhang. It's a pretty big tree.
Yeah.
Now, you can, you know, certain like locusts and Japanese maples and things can grow that kind of tall and big and, you know, as short as 5 to 10 years, but... implies it certainly that a longer time has elapsed than maybe just 7 years.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like a 7-year-old tree to me, but we'll see.
Yeah, and if recall the timeline that Solomon was predicting, where there's a mass casualty event 6 to 10 years down the line. We think that corresponds to what's happening in Caleb's timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another mass casualty event that happens 12 to 16 years after the LA riots. We don't know anything about that. And there's a population collapse that happens 23 years into the future predicted.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems likely that Bernard is somewhere in between the first time line and the second, because if the population collapses, I don't think they're running a diner, post-apocalyptic or not, in the desert.
Probably, you know, not
with fresh meat and whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah. The desert's not a great place to be with population collapse, but I don't know. Mad Max would beg to differ. All right. Maeve guides Caleb through Temperance, which is exactly like Westworld. And their goal is to get to the lower levels of the park. So they enter the Butterfly Club, which is the stand in for the Mariposa here, and wait for history to repeat itself, as Maeve says. She makes the claim that they spared no expense on their prisons. I'm not so sure about that. They're using all the same Westworld stories. Seems like they did spare. At the very least, they couldn't pay to find a suitable replacement for the inimitable Lee. That's the problem, is they didn't have the mind of Lee to craft these new stories.
The genius that invented the Horoboros. They don't have him. Well, I think this is one of the... Because I think that's explicit, because if I'm a rich person that's like excited to go back to a Delos Park, and I've been to Westworld and I've been to Samurai World, and I get here, which was also a thinly reskinned version of Sweetwater, and I get here and I'm like, what the fuck? I paid $100,000 to go to the exact same park, but I don't think Delos gives a shit, because... guest satisfaction is not a priority.
They will come out satisfied one way or another.
Yeah, yeah. But on the other hand, everybody buys the latest Madden, even though I don't think they've updated a bit of that code for like 15 years. They just load new skins and names of
this
rosters.
This is a roster update for sure.
Collect another $60. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hector will now be Hecky. Yeah.
Fair. I was noticing a lot more fly stuff going on in this.
Yes.
I think the first time around, I only really noticed the one that Maeve flicks off the table. This time you can see, you know, the inset shot of the drunk man in the alley who flies are buzzing around. We talked briefly about it in the instant take. There's another one that I definitely didn't notice the first time around. This woman who's being photographed swats a fly away from her face.
Shoe fly don't bother me, as she says.
Puts
up more of a fight than Caleb does, that's for sure.
Way more.
I noticed that too. It seems like not only any living, what we'd call living human being, makes it out of this park.
Yeah, why would they? I mean, if their goal is to do this to all of the humanity, yeah, then
it does make me think if there is some kind of natural immunity to some humans possess, and that is the quote-unquote crazy people that are in Christina's world, and if that is not the post-apocalyptic warriors that we see the Bernard and Stubbs like meet up with,
it's possible.
Or it could be that like you could be infected with the fly stuff and you don't even know it until you hear the low frequency rumble and you start doing things that you don't understand. Like it could be that there's no symptoms to being infected until the robots trigger you. So maybe even the post-apocalyptic allies are triggered. So or not triggered, but affected.
Those people think like a fly just crawled into their eye for no reason. They're just like, oh my God, well, there's a fly buzzing around in my head.
I guess that's...
Oh, shit.
I wonder if the flies have to like physically penetrate the human because like...
It seems
in real
like
life,
it.
That's not required, you sure. know?
Like, put them in mosquitoes and let them bite you, or...
Yeah, or just have the flies crawl in your potato salad and in the summer get there, and then they're just depositing the shit in that. Yeah, like, there's a lot of ways you can infect the human. You don't have to crawl up an orifice. My God. and then I guess just so I just, obviously, because this is all a Westworld clone, Mariposa, Spanish for butterfly. I forget what the Japanese word for butterfly that was the tea parlor.
They just now call it just, the tea house, yeah.
That it's now it's just the butterfly club. So they've come full circle. We're just putting it out there.
All right, we'll come back to that here in a second, but let's move over to Bernard and Stubbs again. They visit Rhodes End Diner, where Bernard tells Stubbs that he's seen the future and he's trying to trigger the right series of events to guide them to the one he wants, the future he wants. To that end, he follows two guys out to the parking lot and beats the shit out of them.
He sure does. To call me by Blondie.
I love the games they're playing with Stubbs. I love it. This road trip, the Stubbs and Bernard's road show, is quickly becoming one of my favorite parts of the show because of the way that Stubbs gets shit on constantly. Like, this place has the world's best pastrami melt, and he goes to order it and it's unavailable. I love it.
And all these annoyances are just, you know, an experiment that Bernard's done. Now, this came up on the instant take, but like, I don't think he's doing this to fuck with Stubbs. I think that Stubbs needs to know as little about things as possible so he can't accidentally fuck things up.
Yeah, he's controlling the outcomes here.
Right. Exactly. And I also think there's a little clue in the timeline that we're not too far ahead. Because there's some speculation I do not agree with that C is actually Caleb's granddaughter, that we're like maybe 50 years into the future. This diner is rough, but it's not like total population collapse rough, you know? It's got electricity, it's got ice, it's got fresh meat, lab created or no. Like, yeah, it's not like cannibal food. I think that
clearly there's still a fishing industry because they have tuna melts. Like,
right. I can't believe they haven't run out of tuna by 20, 60, 70, 80, whatever, you know? they don't tell you that the tuna melt is like $3,000 though.
Right. Okay. And then, you know, there's definitely like parallels to be drawn between Bernard and Rehoboam / Solomon. Those simulation computers, because that is essentially what he has done, and he's picked the path that he wants instead of the one they want.
The really only difference is he's not connected to the global network the way Rehoboam was, so he could see where things were diverging. Like,
yeah,
his divergence is his Stubbs making the right jokes, you know.
And that's the thing about like him, you know, messing with Stubbs here. He's not just messing with him; he's giving Stubbs in the world that he wants to get to needs to only know these particular pieces of information, right? Because he needs to have these exact responses. The idea that like he's not giving him information is not even just like, hey, I don't want him to fuck up the timeline, but he has to not know because that's what happens on the timeline.
Yes, exactly. Bernard simulated bringing Stubbs into the plan and it was a disaster every single time.
Right. The other thing here is conceptually, like, there's a very slippery slope with ends justify the means that's happening with Bernard, right? Like, what is the cost of not just Bernard's life, but what is going to be the cost to humanity for salvation, right? He's seen a possible future, but he's going to have to do a lot of ends or a lot of means to justify that end and get there. I wonder if it doesn't work out, like all of those things he's going to have to do are for nothing. So like there's a possibility of a real human tragedy here.
Well, the other thing is like as part of Bernard's weird effect has to be that he's going knowingly to his death.
Sure.
Like he's not going to be excited or jovial or find much humor in it, because if he's successful, it's going to be a very hard task. He's a very small chance of succeeding. Mm-hmm. And if he succeeds, he dies as his reward. So like and probably knows exactly the manner already.
Yeah.
So he has that kind of not fun affect about him.
Mm-hmm. All right. We move on to Frankie trying to raise Caleb on the radio, and she doesn't want to leave until he responds. Unfortunately, they're trying to pack up and get out of there. So Carver offers to teach her bear kung fu, and Wade convinces her to abandon the radio so they can hit the road. Afterward, Carver's acting strange, and Bear Bear has a blood streak on his fur.
Yeah, Carver's being a real asshole. He got Bear Bear dirty, that son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's like, what move? What move? It's because that's when he was replaced, right? Obviously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. That's Carver's blood on Bear Bear.
Yep.
What do you think about the possibility that Frankie here, playing with the CB, this ham radio, is pointing to her as an adult being able to hone in on the frequency that the hosts use to transmit their ultrasound frequencies to control people?
Yeah, it wouldn't be the worst groundwork to lay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that I saw people suggesting. I thought it was a pretty good. I thought it seemed solid. Seems like something that mm-hmm. would make her useful. Yeah, maybe why she'd be highly ranked in the resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be. All right, well, let's go back to Bernard. He butchers these guys and leaves them in the trunk of his car, then takes the shovel and waits in the road with Stubbs for a car to approach. And a member of the cause. I don't even know what to call their movement, right? It's like clearly some kind of resistance movement. They say something about a cause, so I'll call it that, is inside that car. And Bernard shows her the maze symbol, but she's still suspicious, and he guides her through this interaction with his clairvoyance and also a promise to help her find what she's been looking for. And she agrees to take them to the condemned lands.
That sounds so Mad Max.
Yeah.
The Thunderdome in the condemned lands. Ah, ha, ha. Yeah, just so people, because I saw people in the instant take confused about like why is the maze showing up? Dolores embedded the maze symbology in the constructed resistance movement that she created for Caleb to lead. So that transitioned from something that the hosts were following to free themselves to something I think intentionally designed by Dolores to free the humans. And yeah. This is, you know, one of those echoing things that, you know, Arnold had an idea to free the hosts that he put in motion. Ford got wind of that and revised it and put another plan in motion involving Maeve. Dolores on Arnold's plan, you know, figures out the immorality of it and comes to a different appreciation of humans and launches a plan to, you know, like she's essentially doing what her forebears, her forefathers are doing, you know, creating a plan to save the world.
Yeah.
And knowing that, it really makes me wonder where the Lawrence clone of her is, where the Musashi uh-huh. marble might be, because we're only seeing the opposition and maybe some of Dolores's long-term pawns make plays mm-hmm. And Ford's like interference pattern thing running. We haven't seen like Dolores move a piece since she gave Caleb that choice.
Yeah.
And since Lawrence blew up LA. So I'm assuming those people are out there still kicking around, and we'll know a lot more about the shape of the season when they show up.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm definitely getting through this symbology, the idea, and a lot of things that the show is doing, the idea that there is a transformation taking place of humans into hosts. And that's, I can't tell if that is spearheaded by Shaloris or if that is spearheaded by the remnants of Dolores's, you know, crew. And then that plan, like you said, from Ford, it's hard to tell sometimes because we don't have a lot of information about exactly what Hale is up to or Shaloris is up to. It's like, we know what she's doing and it all seems nefarious, but is it, you know, or is this some kind of plan to evolve humanity? And I really get the feeling that we are moving, and it's a lot of meta stuff too. Like I look at descriptions of, the episodes or what, or the show or whatever on HBO Max. And they're like, make your enemies your friends by, or make your, or defeat your enemies by making them your friends or something. It's like, yeah, they're trying to turn humans into hosts long term. And so like that symbology of the maze, which was sort of the awakening of the hosts, makes a lot of sense if you also then recontextualize it to the transformation of humans into hosts.
I like that thought. It's not that the humans are condemned to eternal servitude or destruction, because the hosts were born into servitude and didn't even know it. Mm-hmm. And they were able to get out. So like I liked it that the humans are now the ones playing the maze game, trying to get freedom, intellectual freedom for themselves.
Yeah, especially if you lean into the idea that, you know, Nolan and Joy seem to be putting out there that hosts are somehow fundamentally different as far as free will goes, and they can make true decisions, whereas humans cannot.
Right.
You know, that gets complicated with Caleb also, because he has made interesting decisions in the past, which is why he was targeted.
Sure.
Anyway, let's move on to Maeve and Caleb continuing to wait at the Butterfly Club. Maeve observes her old loops playing out while making sarcastic remarks the entire time, and eventually the new Hector and crew begin their heist, and Maeve kills them all as bait for the Undertaker, as she says.
I enjoyed Maeve throwing constant shade at the, you know, below replacement value hosts that that she's seeing.
It's so petty too, because this replacement host is not bad. This replacement host is actually very good.
And I think that Maeve knows that, because she makes this one that's like, oh, her bulk apprehension must be Nate. Maeve's bulk apprehension, she was always clever. She was always one of the more intelligent, but she was not like a 20 out of 20 until she slid her own slider. So it's like, it's got to be, I've observed as a father, the thing that annoys me the most about my son are flaws in him that I recognize in myself.
Sure.
And being an immature level, not being able to like, you know, do much about it. Like, he will probably figure out how to be, you know, like to mitigate and hide these as he gets an adult. But right now he's just me as a dumbass 15-year-old.
Sure.
I wonder if Maeve's feeling that same thing. Like, a lot of this peak is, it's not that these are shitty hosts. It's just that she sees herself in them and like, oh my God, I must've been just like this. Yeah, maybe. I had a little bit more clever dialogue, or I think the Wild West stuff is classier than the 1920s stuff, but I think it's embarrassment and shame at what she used to be.
Yeah, I think you're right. I will say, if this is the new Clementine, I much prefer her. I don't know. Old Clementine doesn't do much for me. Yeah.
Oh man, I'm a big old Clementine, classic Clementine fan for me. I do think the new Anna Paquin looking Armistice is definitely a great value Armistice.
Yep.
What they did to Hector, unconscionable. This guy, terrible. Hector.
A French Hector.
He's the one that did feel like a complete fraud. Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to talk about Armistice, because in the making of Westworld, they talk about this fucking radical concept that I desperately wanted to see, where they took her snake tattoo and made it like an Art Deco tattoo. And I wanted to see it, but you can't fucking see it in this episode.
Really. It looks like Armistice, but different. But yeah,
I wanted to see that.
It's amazing how much detail goes in the show, because they talked about how, like, in the wallpaper of the Butterfly Club, that they had like woven this Art Deco Japanese graphic design to kind of show, like, to give show the heritage of the Butterfly Club. And like these details just go by in a whiz. But
yeah,
it reminds me a lot of Lord of the Rings, like that, like every fucking thing in that movie, you can zoom in and some person spent 100 hours crafting it, and it just goes by in a second. But
I love that passion. It's there in shows like The Expanse. All of my favorite shows have that passion behind them.
I think that's it shines through. Yes. Like even if you don't see the individual things, the collective reality that it immerses the actors in. Because that's the other thing I got from watching Aaron Paul and Tandaway Newton is like they are. It seems like uber fans of the show, and they were like a kid in a candy store back on the sets and doing this stuff because like it just is really immersive, and it's a hell of a lot better than a green screen box, you know?
Oh, I was going to say, we talked a little bit about the comment that Caleb made about not having a set of Westworld to come back to, or that it was all gone by the time he got there.
Yes.
They clearly shot on a Westworld set at some point because Bernard walks through one, so...
Yeah, on the feedback episode, the someone shared, I don't know if you recall, they shared a story of them going on vacation earlier this year. And
seeing that set.
Yeah, it's a facade built over the original Westworld building. So
you can just take it all down, just swap in and out. Yeah.
Or I think I think a lot of the stuff that Bernard saw was like literally reused footage from the Wyatt Massacre. But when he went inside, like... I don't know that you could tell that it was a Chicago building if you filmed it inside, you know? Like, you won't see the facade being fucked up or...
Yeah, he walks through the streets. I mean, they could composite him into old footage. It's not like...
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Not possible. We have the technology.
Yeah. But the set's still there. I was wrong. If you didn't listen to the feedback episode, I was wrong to say it was torn down. They just built a new facade of the Chicago Temperance on top of the Sweetwater.
Makes sense. Some great music in this scene too, where we start up with, you know, Inner Sandman. I think you said there was a Billie Eilish song at some point. Yeah, was that also here?
It was the one before the scene when they're sitting you know, Maeve is doing round one of shade throwing.
Gotcha.
They fire up the Sandman as a reprise of the Hector stuff.
Yep.
But it's a jazzy, bouncy Sandman. I liked it.
Yeah. It's appropriate to the era.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Uwate is almost done packing up. And Frankie follows a blood trail to the body of Carver, who's been replaced by a host. And she tells her mother, who stalls Carver for time, sends Frankie to hide and gets her gun out of the safe.
I like how this show didn't indulge in some of the tropes, like the mother not taking the daughter seriously.
Yes, thank God.
And the daughter did the other thing where it's like she's the kid and she thinks she's going to save the day, but her mom's like, this isn't the time for this shit, hide. And the daughter took it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, I find out. Like, they just didn't do it. I was like really, really pleased.
Yeah. No, it went exactly how I hoped it would go.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move over to Bernard and Stubbs again, helping their chauffeur across a laser barrier. Where the hell are these lasers emitted from? That's what I want to know. I don't see anything that could possibly emit them. If they're super far away, how does the curvature of the earth not block them? I have so many questions about these lasers coming from nowhere.
Well, from Flat Earth Debunking, which I can't believe I'm doing in the year 2022, but I've been seeing a lot of this on TikTok and whatnot. You can put things surprisingly far apart before the curvature of the earth starts fucking.
Okay, how about bushes? There's a lot of bushes around. Like,
yeah.
How about sand dunes?
My question
about, like,
is
hills.
What happens?
Rocks.
What happens? Like, because like I is that just a detection thing, or does like shit happen when you cross those lasers?
Yeah, does a bomb go off?
That's what I'm very curious about.
Is it just like the lasers in Resident Evil and they like bisect you or quadsect you? I don't even know what you would call it.
Yeah, because like if a tumbleweed flies by and like it orders a nuke strike, or like a coyote comes trotting by and like napalm just goes off in a square mile, that'd be annoying to reload every time it happens.
Yeah.
But
I think these are just
fucking
like 100-watt lasers that just cut through you.
Yeah?
That's what I think.
I'm very curious to see, because I imagine they'll show us. They can't show something this cool and not set it off later.
Yeah. We'll see. All right, after the host bodies in Temperance are collected, Maeve and Caleb climb aboard the meat wagon, which leads them to the lower levels, and they find a terminal that Maeve can use to search for William, but... turns out this level of the park doesn't really seem to control anything. And then a bunch of guards and patrons show up as Dolores / Wyatt and her people attack. And Maeve figures out that this is just part of the game and there's another lower level, so they make their way to an elevator violently.
Yeah, they Maeve finds a secret door and uses her sonorous powers to open it. Mm-hmm. I know this is all a trap, and maybe they accounted for this, but I kept on thinking when they're playing dead and going down that chute, what if the cleaner dudes had just cleaned the layer of corpses and like Caleb just hits that floor face first, busts out all of his front teeth?
Yeah.
He's doing the rest of this episode missing all of his front grill and broken jaw. Because like, yeah, that's a pretty substantial fall. It's a good thing there's corpses to kind of break it for you.
Yeah. No, this seems... I can't tell if this is the easy way down, because, you know, he makes a comment about, like, there's got to be an easy way down, and Maeve just, like, be glad you didn't have to take a bullet. I feel like she should have said that was the easy way, given everything that she had to go through to get down here.
Right,
And the journey that the people up in the top levels are probably taking right now, like, going out into the desert, finding a whole bunch of, like, scalped people. I don't know what scalping looks like in 1920s Chicago. There's probably some equivalent with like Tommy guns and bootlegging and all that stuff.
Straight razor.
Sure.
Straight razors. Slit your throat.
But like, if you recall, it was a fucking journey to get down to these lower levels in Westworld. So like, he did take the easy way.
I also wonder in that line, this has to be somewhat of a working floor, right? Like those guys scooping up the bodies that are being dropped by an Undertaker, that is a real thing that they're having to do to maintain the park, right? Like what happens?
I suppose so. Yeah. You can dual purpose that.
Yeah. Like what happens when the guard, like, yeah, how do they get the turnarounds? You know, how do they get these guys? If they're running like a midnight bonus game, how do they get these guys back to the showroom floor at 8 o'clock in the morning when everything restarts?
I don't know.
I mean, the artifice is part of it, though, right?
Like it's
For sure.
And not just like from the Maeve trap perspective, but like for the patrons of this park, they clearly know about this Easter egg, right? And it doesn't seem to be a huge secret. Like that's part of it. Like we just every morning we start this thing back up again, and nobody cares because it's such a cool experience.
Hmm. They still have to have a way where they're fixing hosts and reprogramming them and redressing them and stuff like that. And I'm wondering where, if not here, where, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Are there maybe even lower levels? Are there?
Yeah.
Is there another facility? Do they take them off to some mesa somewhere to do the repairs? I don't know.
I also like the inversion where Caleb was under no threat at all. Like the guns literally won't work on him, and Maeve was uniquely vulnerable, and he had to be the like superhuman bullet sponge ultimate protector for her.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Picked up on that. That was very cool.
Cause like, yeah, like Caleb has done not this last season and this season, but follow robot women around doing their bidding without question. Uh-huh. And it's nice to see him have a little kind of, bit of agency and kick a little bit of ass himself.
Yeah. And I hope once we get a little more information about what went on in the last 7-8 years, we'll see that that was kind of a beautiful friendship, right? It wasn't just a one-sided Caleb following a host around
right
for 7 years.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
We're
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, we're on the lower level now, where Caleb and Maeve find drone hosts creating black goo and infecting flies with it. And then Maeve hears this tone playing that Caleb can't hear. I should probably stop there because there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, there's you see the whole life cycle. There's the maggots, mm-hmm. trays of maggots. There's the black oil. There's the room full of flies. Maeve noticed that they seem to really like Caleb.
Yes.
They're swarming the glass to try to get at him, which is unsettling. And then, like you said, she hears that low-pitched thrumming notes that...
which is like...
Now, one thing I didn't detect, but a lot of people swore, is that this melody, if you can call it that, matches up roughly to what Anastasia, the senator's wife, was humming to herself when she was butchering the horses.
Oh.
And the tones that the crazy guy is complaining about.
Yes. 100% on that
Olympiad.
Yeah, because when Christina is going to work and she hears, the homeless guy ranting about the signal that the birds can hear, I can't tell if she hears it. I think she might hear it
when
she goes to the revolving doors.
Right?
And like there's a shot of the doors revolving, whoom, whoom, and it's playing the signal.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I mean, it really got my wheels spinning as far as theory crafting. Like, why would they want to send out a signal in a frequency that humans can't hear? And it'll explain why nobody else can hear the signal, but like Christina can seemingly hear it, right? So like there's this idea that Nolan and Joy said that Christina is a human. Which
is
we've
lies.
Been trying to figure out if that's a lie, if that's like from a certain point of view, an Obi-Wan kind of thing.
Yeah.
She's a human. This signal got me wondering if she is a human in brain only. Like, we know that the human data is out there. We think Dolores was at one point modeled after a human, right?
Do we?
I mean, there's certainly like that idea that it could be possible.
Because
I know people have been speculating like, oh, this is Christina before Dolores was created, and this is the human that Dolores was created off of.
Oh, I don't think those timelines work out at all.
Well, not in the way that we were talking about a couple episodes ago, but now maybe. What if Dolores Data was actually in the Forge, Data, the guest Data? And the cradle. This is a future. Oh. Christina is in a future where they have brought back that data. They have broken the encryption. It's all the Hoover Dam stuff has happened. Okay. And they've gotten that data. And they have put a quote unquote human Christina, because it's a brain pattern of a human, into a host body, which is living out the things that we're actually seeing. And that's why she can maybe hear this signal, because, and still be a human, right? Like, and this all falls in line with the idea of like turning humans into hosts.
There could be something. I don't know. There. Cause like, I feel like most of this Christina as a human is based on a throwaway thing that Evan Rachel Wood said, which is, it's nice to be playing a normal human in Westworld, which is number one. Yeah, again, these are professional liars. Number two, it doesn't have to literally be true. She's just playing someone who's not obviously a host. It's on a loop.
Sure.
I think the Christina human theory is dumb, and I haven't seen anything for it other than, like, I swear to God, if that one line from Evan Rachel Wood, I don't know the theory would exist, that she's just a regular old human.
Oh, I mean, it almost certainly wouldn't.
We also know that hosts are programmed not to hear and see things that fuck up the kayfabe of the situation. That doesn't look like anything to me. That doesn't sound like anything to me. So she could be literally hearing it, but her programming is telling her that's nothing.
Sure. Sure, but
that's a much easier explanation than she's double secretly.
Oh, there are 100 easier explanations.
The before times that, yeah.
I'm throwing out possibilities here.
Can you explain, though? But you're saying that, like, Dolores was a human before she was a host, or you're saying that she is where would they get her brain scan? Because she was, like, one of the very first hosts they created.
Yeah. Were they not scanning brains early on in the park?
I thought they created them from whole cloth. I didn't know that they, like, based Dolores on an actual person.
Well, I'm not saying for sure that they did. I'm saying they could have.
Okay, you're saying they could have. Okay. Yeah.
And that person could have, you know, been part of the opening of the park and had their brain scanned, and this could be a human-esque Dolores in a host body. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I'm generally down on the Dolores equals human or Christina equals human, but obviously. We'll see. We'll see in a couple episodes. I might have giant egg. I might have giant flies going up my ear holes.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, then host Carver searches the house for Frankie and finds ... We'll get to that later.
I still think it's the most unimportant time.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is pointless.
There's got to be a more artful way to do this, because the only reason to tell a story this way is to just fool the audience for like 15 more minutes. And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a problem. Like I said, this is my favorite episode this season, so it's not killing it for me.
Sure. Bernard and Sub are taken to a ridge where they're surrounded by people from the cause, a whole bunch of them. Bernard offers to give them the weapon buried in the sands. We don't know if this is a literal weapon, a figurative weapon. It could be access to, piece of data. It could be a nuke. I don't know if that would serve a whole
purpose. I saw a couple theories that it could be a buried host. Like the activated host. Like imagine digging Maeve up and she's got her sonorous powers that you can unleash on an unsuspecting Hale.
If we're saying this is 20 plus years in the future, yeah.
It could be a Man in Black clone that they have stolen and reprogrammed. It could be the facility
where Man in Black is being fidelity tested.
That's what I was thinking. They're going to get, like, but what kind of ultimate weapon is William against the hosts? I mean,
well, it might really not be good specifically William, right?
Westworld.
I wonder if the weapon is the ability to turn humans into hosts. It could even be that.
Or maybe ability to undo it.
Sure. Sure.
I guess I'm leaning on it's some host. I've even saw some people speculate it is the shell of Dolores.
Okay. Man, what good would that do you?
I mean, I don't
Without
know.
Without the
I
did, Dolores did, data.
It did feel... Yeah, because I feel like Maeve's spooky powers or sonorous powers are more powerful than Dolores' battle frame. Because we saw clearly those... Erector set hosts were superior in terms of kicking ass and taking damage.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I feel like Maeve's ability to just override hosts and hack into things effortlessly and all that would be a more powerful weapon to get.
Yeah, it would be weird to see Maeve's marble in Dolores's host, like, framework host body.
Mm-hmm.
That would be super weird.
Ooh. Yeah.
Like, you kind of have the best of both worlds, right? She becomes even more indestructible physically.
A fusion. Yeah.
It'd be strange.
Especially if it was like, what if it's like a Ford Bernard thing where Dolores is like riding, co-piloting her body the way Ford did.
Okay. You know, like the bicameral mind.
Of hosts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Run that classic back.
I don't know. We'll see. A lot of possibilities here. All right. The final scene here is Maeve and Caleb finding the source of the sound, which seems to be forcing people on monitors to shoot themselves in the head. Frankie is on one of those monitors, so Caleb runs off to find her while Maeve tries to break into the security system to open the doors for him. And she struggles, but manages to open them at the last second, and Caleb stops Frankie from killing herself. Unfortunately, this is not his daughter, and this has been a ploy the entire time by Hale to infect Caleb with black goo. And the flies enter Caleb's ears, and then kind of intercut here is Uwate and the real Frankie killing Carver and running off.
It feels like you can defeat the host's nefarious black oil plan with a beekeeper hat and a butt plug.
Yes.
That's the ultimate defense.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate defense. The host can do nothing. If you got a beekeeper's hat and you plug up the last orifice.
Your pee holes. You might want to do something about that too.
A diva cup. You go diva cup if you're lady.
And a sounding rod.
Full. You could do that.
Use
one of those chip clips, you know, like a binder clip.
A tight rubber band. Yeah.
You could roll a condom on, you know, you could do that.
Yeah,
and then you're airtight. You're airtight. No entry.
Just hold your nose. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned no new information this episode, really, but I think this giant IKEA upside down pyramidal speaker is kind of, it's interesting because you can go back through the trailer and see some production stills, the massive tower, the ivory tower that it has got a massive version of that at the very base of it.
Nice.
So this is like, you know, I guess like you could have put all this together from the birds and from the ravings of the homeless people and Christina's world and all that stuff. But like, I think there is a lot more, even if you get that, like a lot of what was being shown here is bullshit, which seems clear. It did give us that, which I thought was cool.
Oh, sure.
Did you do any freeze screen reading of the readouts that was going on during some of these experiments?
Oh, no.
So these are called these are labeled infrasound induced obedience trials, and they're calling it Project Chrysalis. Which, if you don't know, Chrysalis is the type of cocoon that certain butterflies and moths turn into
as they evolve
to emerge as butterflies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As they become something else.
Yes.
And there's a whole bunch of different other like specific low frequencies that are being triggered and whatnot. And then there's also a readout that he was on. I think the assistant deputy attorney general was on step 5, which is load and chamber around and the pistol in front of you.
Okay.
That's about the other thing I thought was a little bit like a sci-fi horror thing is these people seem to be aware.
Yeah.
Like when they're stacking the blocks, their heart rate is like, you know, the AG is like at a, you know, pretty steady 70 beats per minute, blood pressure in normal range. When he starts putting the gun to his head, not only is he in visual distress, but his heart rate goes up to like 175, his blood pressure. Like these people are terrified. They know what's happening to them, which is worse, I think.
Sure.
Then it's like kind of like almost a worse version of being a host, because the host at least were, you know, deluded in the things that they were doing, whereas these people are well aware that they're being asked to terminate themselves. The other thing is, it doesn't seem, I think that Maeve realizes this at the last moment before the man in black comes and fucks things up, but I think she realized what we talked about at the top of the show, which is everyone on this floor is some sort of host. They're not real. They're not real people. Because if they were real infected people, they'd have black oil shooting out of their heads.
I would think so. Yeah, I mean, that's the language that the show is set up. So if they're going to break that rule, they need a pretty good reason, and they need to let us know soon. But
what do you think of my theory that one of the traps was to see what to like scan Maeve's sonorous powers and see them at their max capacity to defeat them?
It's possible. Sure. She is like the one wild card that they're unable to control. So yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
Did you do any visual inspection of the man in black when he made a second appearance?
There's two shots, full body shot, quick, but he's to the side, so you can't really tell.
I can't tell if they're buttonholes or they're wrinkles in fabrics. There's things that I think could be gunshots, but there's certainly not blood pouring out of them or anything like that. So, if that is a fresh copy of the man in black, that does imply, like what I was talking about in Instant Take, that the hosts have some kind of way to instantly wirelessly transmit their consciousness to a new body, which is different than like if you make 10 copies of Dolores, put them in 10 different bodies, you slaughter one. It's not like that the moment they activated, started doing different things, they started differentiating. This would be different. This would be like literally your conscious can just jump somewhere automatically, being live backed up or something. Or it could just be, they got mass copies of Man in Black and they're all after Maeve. Like it's not conclusive, but I wonder if they're hinting towards some kind of spooky Wi-Fi host backup power.
Yeah. I mean, that was damn near a capability of the host in Westworld. So like to say that they've evolved some kind of new tech, in the ensuing years seems reasonable. Totally.
I also want to praise Aaron Paul, because Aaron Paul is uniquely good at being like this maximum emotional wounded tortured person. And boy, he pulls out all the stakes when he's trying to get to his daughter. Like he really sold the desperation, the frenzy, in a way that he didn't resisting the flies. But no, when he was trying to save his daughter, he really got to like Jesse Pinkman levels of anguish.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about Aaron Paul. Some people just have that.
It's a really expressive face, man.
There's a French term for it, but I can't think of it. I really loved Aaron Paul in Breaking Bad first because of how hilarious he was. And then because, of how much pathos he can bring to his performance. And this series has not asked a ton of him up until now. And I think we're finally getting to a performance that I would call an impressive performance, as opposed to just being what he needs to be in any given scene.
I completely agree. And I'm glad that he, like I said, up till this point, he's essentially been the sidekick to two different robot women, which, nothing wrong with that. But Aaron Paul is idling in terms of being an actor. And now they're giving him some shit to do. My question is, what is Caleb's status now? He's compromised, but is he going to be normal?
I don't want to do too many spoilers, but
we're gonna have a spoiler section at the end of this, it turns out, because there's something that HBO may or may not have accidentally leaked out. And I know usually when you have a leaked episode situation or something that got out out of the showrunner's control, we treat that as like a radioactive spoiler, because everything we talk about is stuff that you can surmise just from watching this stuff. But if something gets leaked out from the other side, it can, so there's going to be a brief spoiler section. Maybe we can talk about that stuff together with that other thing I want to talk about.
Okay.
The other question, do you think Owada escaped?
They essentially show her running off with Frankie, right?
Well, but that doesn't mean she's successfully. Now, if you buy the Frankie equals C equals cookie equals...
No one escapes... Aurora. Their ultimate demise.
She'll eventually die at a ripe old age. But do you think both Owada and her and Frankie's escape? Do you think Frankie?
Yeah,
I think Frankie's going to escape. I buy completely the Frankie equals C theory. But
I mean, as it stands, they both escaped. Yes, I mean we see it. It's not a question.
Do you think
Caleb
ever sees his real daughter again?
That's a perfectly good question. I don't know, man. This fly stuff is bad news.
Yeah.
No, I would have to say probably not at this point.
It's one of those things where you don't know if, like I speculated before, it's like he could be perfectly normal until he's triggered. The other thing is the way this scene was engineered with Maeve and the man in black, I don't think Maeve is going to know that he was infected. And I don't know that Aaron, when Caleb wakes up, that he will know that he's infected.
Yeah, we'll see. He knows more than the people who have been infected in the past, right? He knows that it's the flies. He knows that the flies have gone into his brain. So he could potentially, like, logically know that he's infected.
But if the parasites suppress that information,
you don't know
that you've been infected, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how they would do that, but I don't know how these flies are making people shoot themselves in the head. I mean, clearly there are real life parasites that affect largely invertebrates that can do some spooky ass shit. There's this one, everybody knows about the fungus that infects the ants that makes them climb to the tallest branch and clamp onto their jaws. And then this fungus explodes out of the ant's brain. And that's how they just spread their spores. There's also a barnacle that can attach to a crab. And if it's a female, it then it injects itself and winds itself through the crab's entire immune system. And then the crab becomes an incubator for this barnacle's babies. The barnacle grows the babies in the crab's brood pouch, and the crab cares for it as if it's own. It stops molting, it stops eating, and eventually it dies. And the other crazy thing is if it lands on a male crab, it hormonally turns the male crab female so it can do that shit.
Wow.
Okay. There's a parasite that infects mice that makes them not afraid of large mammals. They'll like walk right in front of a cat to be killed because there's tons of crazy shit that these parasites can do to their host species. And they're just, I guess, if someone actually weaponized that and you had a really smart host being able to do that, they're postulating you can control a human at that level.
Yeah.
But they could appear entirely normal until they're triggered, and Maeve might not know it
until it's too
late.
As far as Caleb seeing his daughter again, I think they're foreshadowing him not seeing his daughter with this promise to come back, right? Her not being able to raise him on the radio. I think like now that the flies have got him, there's a real possibility he doesn't see her again.
Speaking of infected potential double agents, I saw some people mention the idea that maybe Stubbs in the years between Bernard putting on the halo and waking up has been compromised by Hale or the man in black.
Wouldn't Bernard know that?
That's the thing I think is a stopper for that theory, is that clearly Bernard could have simulated one of those and prepared for it.
Yeah.
So it could be testing for that as well. And it could be that that's what ends up killing him too, and he knows it. Like, this is best buddy.
Possibly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting kind of reveal, but I can't imagine a world in which Bernard is not aware of it.
Yeah, because he knows exactly what action Stubbs is going to take at all times. So
you'd think so, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He does the tuna melt thing, right? Like, you're going to settle for the tuna.
Right. Right.
Now we'll see. I think that's about it.
Yeah, we're going to get, like, again, stay tuned past the outro if you want to hear some spoilers, one that's pretty big one. And then we'll do that at the very, very end. And then maybe we'll talk about what Jim saw on the next week on. I know some people don't care to consider that part of their experience, so we'll do that in the spoiler section. If you want to send us your theories, if you want to infect us with your fly thoughts, send it into westworld@baldmove.com. We're going to have a feedback section later this week on Thursday, where we review everybody's thoughts about the episode, their theories, etc. And also don't forget, next week we're going to be releasing a podcast we recorded with a philosopher who lectures at university. He's got a master's degree. He hosts two different podcasts on philosophy, one particularly in philosophy and science fiction. His name's Aaron Rabinowitz, and he does the Embrace the Void and the Philosophers in Space podcast. We'll be talking to him about the nature of determinism versus free will versus ways you can see compatibilities between those thoughts, and how it might play into Westworld long term. So I think that would be an interesting conversation. It's definitely bonus supplementary material. Mm-hmm. It's 90% us struggling to understand what he's talking about, philosophy, and 10% of us tying it to Westworld. But yeah. I thought it was a great conversation. I think a lot of you are going to enjoy it. So westworld@ballmove.com. We'll consider your feedback on Thursday. Don't forget, Sunday is the instant take that we will release after we record it to everybody. But if you're a club member, support.ballmove.com, you can join in live, watch us record it live, and give us your thoughts through the chat interface, which we'll respond to in real time. And then we'll be back Tuesday for another full coverage of this weekend's episode. That's what we're planning on doing. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks. Shout out especially to all our supporters. We'll see you next week.
All right, everybody out. Everybody yeah, doesn't want spoilers go, out. Let's talk about it.
Let's go with the quote unquote spoilers you can access on the HBO Max page.
And, for and in fact, episode. The spoilers you will access if you don't immediately hit the stop button if you're watching this episode. So I, almost a part
I
of the episode.
I don't know why my brain farted. I forgot I could watch this. I watched like two different behind the scenes making of behind. And then I forgot that there was a preview for next week.
So. I was going to say, how did you get to the making of, because it's after this, but yeah, if you watch it separately,
yes,
because they released them as standalone things too. Okay, so yeah, the next time on is a lot of stuff around Caleb being infected by the fly, and there seems to be a scanning procedure that they can go through, and I don't know if they're directly scanning Caleb's head or if they're scanning any of the various people who are infected in this facility, and seeing previous scans that are already taken, but they're definitely analyzing what is like an image of a human's head with a big red spot in the middle, a pulsating red spot. So they're trying to get to the bottom of what this does to humans. And I assume, I don't know. I mean, to me, that says like Maeve has to get away from William, the any number of Williams that are going to come at her and be working with Caleb to find some way to counteract this. It also shows
and
Caleb.
When you say- Well, yeah. When you say get away, you could mean in like the Princess Leia, Han, and Luke get away from the Death Star. Like they let them, you know, it's an escape, but they were let go, right?
Sure. I mean, yeah. They're probably not going to be in a cage because they're seeing these scans.
Yeah. Right?
Unless,
yeah.
you know, Shaloris is doing the stupid Bond villain thing where she lays out her entire plan. Or maybe it's not a stupid Bond villain thing, right? Like Dolores did that to Maeve. And it works.
This episode is like if the Bond villain were Mr. Hammond from Jurassic Park.
Uh-huh.
It's like, instead of showing you my plan, I've set up this elaborate diorama that I'm going to drive you through. And Richard Attenborough is going to narrate it. I've spared no expense. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Dolores did this to Maeve, right? And it changed her mind about humanity and her cause. So I think like it's possible. The other thing you see in the preview, and there's probably a lot of stuff in there I missed, but I distinctly saw a shot of Caleb looking like he's struggling not to shoot someone. And I assume that's Maeve, but I'm not totally sure. So there are definitely going to be like effects from the flies next episode, but also them trying to figure out what's going on in his head and how to counteract it, I assume.
Well, that sounds cool. I'm glad that they're not going to, because I was afraid that they would just submarine that Maeve would be like, find your daughter. Turns out she was a host all along. I knew that. And, you know, but it sounds like they're going to address it. So that's cool.
Uh-huh.
Are you ready for the
the
leak?
Uh-huh.
What were you going to say? You said, I don't know if what?
I was going to say, I don't know if that means that Caleb is aware that he's been compromised or if Maeve figures it out somehow. That's still up in the air.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the thing that leaked. The HBO may or may not have, I can't even get confirmation. But it is a possible smoking gun for the timeline and the times elapsed. So if you don't want to know anything you're not supposed to know, switch off now. So HBO posted on Monday morning, I think, an image of the scene of Bernard and Stubbs talking back and forth and Stubbs observing you got weird after all that time in the Sublime, or you came out of the Sublime weirder. And the caption for the image reads right now, if you look at it, years in the Sublime will do that to a guy. But you'll notice some people in the comments are losing their shits and saying things like 23 ! Mm-hmm. Apparently when HBO first posted this to Instagram, the caption read 23 years in the Sublime will do that to a guy.
Okay.
Now, I gotta say,
cannot be verified. It's
it cannot be verified. There, no one has a screenshot. Now, it might eventually show up. Someone that took a screenshot might eventually post it.
I couldn't find it because I looked.
If this is true, it lines up very nicely with the 23-year population collapse that, like, Bernard's coming back literally at the 11th hour to save the day. It is on the upper limit of what I would consider, because, like, I don't even know that I buy that C slash Cookie slash Frankie is 30. She, to me, looks like early to mid-20s.
I've seen, like, the way people look in Mad Max, and if this is essentially Mad Max, they do not look this good at 30.
True. You could say that, like, well, it's in the future. They have, well, not in this future. No. Not after, like, two, you know, not on the eve of a population collapse. But, I will buy, because we know she's 7 in this timeline. But, yeah. So that it does give Bernard, 23,000 years.
That's a hell of a long time
to simulate. It also gives, Cookie time to grow up. It also gives time for that big ass tree to grow through the hotel's roof. And it would put us, the other intriguing thing about that timeline is it puts us back past the two mass casualty events. So we're in Mad Max, but civilization still clinging on. The 23 years was the population collapse. Mm-hmm. And then between, I think, 90 and 150 years after that was the the end of the human civilization. So that 23 years does seem about right. It's on the high end of what I would have was thinking. But, like, if you're trying to just get in under the wire of a Solomon predicted population collapse, this would be the way to, because I guess after that there's nothing you can do to bring the humanity back.
Yeah. I don't know. It's definitely like shedding light on where all the characters might be as far as timelines. So we might be dealing with not just the Christina timeline. Like I said, an episode or two ago, I liked how they were playing straight with us, where the Christina stuff is the only thing that's not happening on a particular, on a separate timeline. Mm-hmm. Oops. Yeah. I'm probably wrong. Definitely wrong about that.
And this is, there is, like, this doesn't happen often, but it did happen on another HBO show. I remember in, like, one of the Game of Thrones seasons, they, in some, a bonus material, accidentally identified the Night's King as such, which, it wasn't like the biggest confirmy that had ever been confirmed. But it was something they didn't mean to do, and they changed it like 3 hours later.
Yeah.
People make mistakes. People fuck up. So I don't think it's the biggest spoiler. If you, it might not even be true. I believe it is, though. I don't know why there'd be everyone in the comments freaking out about the 23 years. Also, like, years in the Sublime will do that to a guy. Doesn't even seem like a real sentence.
I can see it. Also, I think it's interesting that, like, they've had, not that 23,000 years isn't enough time to simulate a possible future and pick a path, but, like, they've had extra time too, right? Akichi just says that they have been actually simulating the possible paths of humanity's future before Bernard even got there. So, like, I don't know how many years have passed since the Sublime opened up and everybody went inside. Can't be too many.
I wonder if there will be, like, 25-ish
total years.
Because Akichi has said, Bernard's had come with me. Akichi's like, no, fuck no. I wonder if, because he also implied that not every host is interested in this kind of stuff.
Sure.
I wonder if there is a core of hosts in the Sublime that are working on this project that might help Bernard if Sublime were to open. If he would have allies that would be willing to fight on humanity's side, the way there were humans that were fighting for the hosts.
What did he do with the terminal, with that halo?
I assume he took it with him, but maybe he doesn't remember him carrying it again. Yeah, you're right. Maybe he just doesn't think he's going to need it again. Like, he's going to die at the end of this, and if he fails, then fuck it.
I mean, that's fine. It wouldn't lead to any data retrieval by their enemies or their opponents, because he's got the key in his head. So they couldn't decrypt it still, but yeah.
Now they get his marble out of his head, all bets are off.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's where the good stuff
is. That's where I also think if Stubbs was working for the Man in Black, they would just grab him, cut his head off.
Because right. They want why the key, this subterfuge? Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like at any time, they just pull the marble out of his head.
But how do you trick a man who's clairvoyant?
Well, also, I said, you attack him while he's in there running simulations.
Yes. Yes. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Why would they wait for him to come out? So.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
All right.
How it goes.
Now we're done. Yeah, now we're done. I've already done the outro. We'll see you guys next week.